Stop the podcast.
Stop the podcast.
Hi, everybody. Just to let you know, this episode of Fish is sponsored by TV licensing.
Yes, TV licensing. What are you watching on TV, Andy?
I have been watching a show that's called 2 Weeks in August.
Okay.
Despite it being July at the time of recording.
Oh, you don't have to watch TV shows in the time that their name references.
No, absolutely. I watched The Darling Buds of May in winter. Anyway, 2 Weeks in August. It's a really good series. It's set on a lovely Mediterranean holiday.
Ooh.
And it's a group of old mates from uni who've gathered together. Some of them have got kids, some of them haven't. Some of them have been going through big life events. And it's one of those amazing pressure cooker series where things just get more and more and more tense.
Oh, those stressful ones.
I love it. I love it.
I love my comedy, I gotta say. So I've been watching Android, which is Diane Morgan's new thing, and I absolutely love it. But I just, for me, I always, on television, watch everything with someone from Bolton in it. That's basically all I watch.
And she's from Bolton.
She's from Bolton.
But in this show, I believe she's a robot.
She's a robot, and it is not certain where in the country she's from.
It depends where the facility is that makes her, I suppose.
I guess so. But what are we actually here to say?
Oh, we're here to say that if you want to watch any of these shows, your TV license covers you to watch over 400 TV channels and everything on BBC iPlayer.
That is incredible.
So 2 Weeks in August has finished going out now, but you can get hold of it on the iPlayer.
If you want to find out more about this, then go to tvl.co.uk/pod.
Now back to the tension and the stress and the misery of this episode of Fish.
Oh, I thought you were referencing Bolton. On with the podcast.
The Killer Bees.
ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 proudly present The Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of The Killer Bees.
Don't sweat the technique.
Now from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, bringing you the fastest 3 hours in Houston sports radio, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Ooh, what up, H-Town? Hey, how we doing?
He's Blank, I'm Branham. It's Sean Mapes behind the glass. A Wednesday edition of the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Lakers, Astros can't win baseball games. They've dropped four of their first six games.
Jeremy.
Anything I say untrue?
No, but you said they can't win baseball games. They have 2 wins.
They've struggled to win baseball games.
Okay, that's better.
They've struggled to win baseball games. They've lost four of their first 6 games. Obviously not panicking. You lose 4 of 6 games in the middle of summer. Nobody says a word. But because it is the very beginning of the season, there's a little bit of, I don't know how I would measure the concern of Astro fans. I still think it's very, very little, but mm-hmm. It's not nothing. You know what I mean?
It's
more
not,
than zero.
But you got two different schools of thought, right? You've got Astros orange Kool-Aid drinkers who are coming out fighting to anybody that dare say that this team has some things to be concerned about. And then you've got the other part of the equation, which says, okay, they're not playing great, but you know, there's light at the end of the tunnel, and it's too early, and even Dusty is now answering questions about it to where it's going to be a back and forth. You know, some people are going to be out there critical, saying, I don't care what time of the year it is. Other people are going to tell you, hey, they've had slow starts in like 4 of the last 5 years, and look where they've gotten. So I get it. Look, you clearly can point the finger at where that they have been less than stellar, but you also know that there have been people that have been hurt that sometimes are going to also play a part of that equation.
Yeah, I don't think it's anything that I'm worried about from a long-term point of view. Like, the struggle is right now at the top of the order. Mm-hmm. That's going to cost you over a 6-game period. Whenever you have Pena and Bregman that can't get on base before the middle of the order that's been producing, that's going to cost you 4 of 6 games. But I don't think that's going to be a long-term permanent issue. I think Bregman's going to be fine. I think he's going to get on base a ton. Jeremy Pena, quite frankly, isn't that type of hitter. Like, he's not a dude that sees a lot of pitches. He's not a dude that puts bat on ball a ton. He strikes out a good amount. His on-base percentage over his career is pretty similar to his first 6 games. So that's kind of just who he is. Like, he's a power hitter. He's not really your prototypical leadoff guy. And I think he's better suited for a different spot in the lineup, to be quite honest with you. Now, do you need to move him before Jose Altuve comes back? I won't go that far. But I don't think it's anything that's going to be a permanent problem. Now, I do think that it shows you how much the Astros miss Jose Altuve. And yes, it's only a six-game sample, but when your top two hitters are getting on base each less than 30%, Payne, you're pretty close to his career average, Bregman way below his career average, it shows you how important Jose Altuve is to this batting lineup.
No, he really is. And you know, as much as we talked about, you know, who was going to fill in the leadoff spot, ideally he's that guy. He's the guy at the top that gets it all started. He's the igniter, the spark plug and all those things. And you'd love to have him back sooner rather than later. I think that's why everybody needs to just take a deep breath, is because you know that help definitely will be on the way. You don't know exactly when, but when you know that Altuve will be back, and you know that from the standpoint of Michael Brantley, it should be by the end of the month that he will be back, that those are two very important, very good hitting bats that are going to be back at the top of that lineup. And that's going to make everything on the trickle-down effect much more effective and better from an offensive perspective. You know, I think the one thing that kind of is puzzling to me is how many people say they follow the game, say they're fans of baseball, and then tell me that you are, but you're not, when you don't figure out that starting pitchers, unless you're Alcantara, don't go 8 and 7, 8 and 9 innings right from the jump, right out of the gates on a frequent basis. Everybody losing their mind about the starting pitching, and then, oh, well, finally, someone from the starters did something because they got a quality start out of Fromber last night. No, the starting pitching has been fine. This is the first series in two games of the season. They're not going to be in midseason form and going 7, 8, 9. So just take a deep breath there, too.
I tend to agree, although, like, their final line scores, though, like, they're a little high. Like, I think Hunter Brown pitched better than what his line score said. Luis Garcia might have actually had a better line score than he pitched. And, like, Jose Urquidy got hit pretty good, too. So, like, it hasn't been good starting pitching, but for the first trip through the rotation, it's like, okay. Like, I'm not expecting them to light the world on fire either. So, no overreaction there. Now, the bullpen did get into a bad spot because of, like, just the nature of baseball. Like, the nature of baseball, when you have the first trip through the rotation to the start of a 162-game season, and no one's going to go, like, deep into games, no one's going to flirt with 100 pitches the first time through. In fact, they're going to be closer to 80 than they are 100. And then also the fact that you had to go to that bullpen pretty often. Ryan Pressly got under the weather, so you're without a key piece of your bullpen for two games in the middle of that four-game series. So I think it kind of works out that that little game in Minnesota, I call it a little game because for some reason they had a game on Thursday scheduled, then the off day on Friday, and then finished the series Saturday, Sunday, was kind of quirky, was kind of weird. Mm-hmm. I think it is beneficial that game got moved to Friday, and I think that Framber Valdez did you a really big solid yesterday. Like, a lot of times the top of the rotation pitcher, the ace of the staff, doesn't win a game. Sometimes it's just he goes seven innings to save the bullpen, just to save, you know, the workload of some of the other relievers. And while Framber Valdez was the losing pitcher in that game, I look at how he pitched really in the first two starts, but especially yesterday, knowing that he had to go deep into that game because of the state of the bullpen. It just validates what we've been saying about Framber Valdez for the last 2 years or so, that this dude is an ace. This dude is one of the very best pitchers in all of baseball. I thought he was really good yesterday against, you know, a bad Detroit Tiger lineup, but he gave you seven innings whenever this bullpen was not in the best state of affairs, and that's what aces do. Even if you lose a game, I thought Framber Valdez yesterday had an ace-level performance because of where this team is right now.
No question. I couldn't agree more in the fact that I don't think you have anything to worry about at the top of your rotation no matter what. Sure, there's concern about Hunter Brown, and I talked about it before the season started, that I think now that more teams in the league and hitters across baseball have seen him, it might change a little bit early in the season, but it's still early in the season. These guys are still figuring things out. They're still getting completely stretched out, but it's nice to know that you have two guys at the top of your rotation that can still kind of become slump busters for you. If you start losing games, and like you said, you know, having a lot of relief pitchers soak up a lot of innings, you've got guys that can go deep into the game even now, have, you know, plus stuff in the big leagues, and can get hitters out consistently. Now, he had a couple of problems, you know, really drilling his breaking pitches into the dirt short. It caused him some problems and put a traffic on the bases or allowed them to move up. But again, those things will work themselves out over time, and he will iron them out the more the season goes. But a quality start right there from Framber Valdez was exactly what they needed and exactly what they got.
Yeah, my positive, I had a couple of positive takeaways from that game yesterday. One of them is that, like, Framber, even his first start, I mean, he's been really good. He's got an ERA of 1.5. Like, this guy looks like the Framber Valdez that finished top five in Cy Young voting last year, and I expect him to be right there again this year. Even in the losing effort, he gave you what you needed in that game. The offense didn't really help him out. And I was annoyed with Martin Maldonado last night, Blankers. I'm not going to lie to you. Maldy at times, like, we love Maldy. He brings a lot to this team. He's got one of the best pop times in all of baseball. He's great at handling a young pitching staff. He's great at calling a game, like seeing a game through and calling a game. I believe all of that. I overwhelmingly like Martin Maldonado. But some of these pass balls, man, like, come on. All of a sudden, you have a pass ball late in that game. You move a runner up to second and third, and instead of getting an inning-ending double play, a run scores with the infield drawn in. Like, that thing just bothered me. If I'm picking a goat of the game yesterday, honestly, it would have been Martin Maldonado for that one pass ball. Like, that's a mistake in that spot that swung that inning. Because the next pitch, double play, you're out of the inning.
Now,
instead, you bring the infield in. You have to get the out at first because Pena bobbled it
a little bit. Is that lack of effort? Or is that just lack of intensity to know that no matter what in that situation, I got to smother that thing and not let anybody advance?
Yeah. I mean, it hit him in the glove. It was a pass ball. It wasn't even a ball that was in the carpet. Like, I said carpet because they play on turf over at U of H, and we played for 4 hours yesterday. But there wasn't even a ball in the dirt. It hit him right in the mitt. It was, like, nose high. You know, some of the people that would, I guess, defend Martin Maldonado on that specific play would say, well, look, Fromber has really good movement, and for the same reason that Fromber's tough to hit, he's tough to catch. That's a play you cannot drop the ball there and let it squirt by the catcher circle
in the game.
And allow two runners to move up. Like, that, those little things are the things that bother me. Like, I don't care if a dude goes 0-for-4 every now and then. That's going to happen. The other guy's on scholarship too. I don't care if you don't have the range to get to a ball. Like, the little things are the things that drive me up the wall. Yesterday was Martin Maldonado having the ball pop out of his glove, and all of a sudden you go from first and second to second and third. He gets the ground ball to short the very next pitch, would have been out of the inning. Instead of run scores, kind of changes the way the game was played there on after. And then two nights ago, obviously, it was the Chaz McCormick thing. Like, those little things are the things that drive me crazy. Yep. And honestly, I feel like they drive Dusty Baker crazy too.
Yeah, I think they do. And I think that, again, this kind of start to a season drives everybody nuts too, because they don't want to keep addressing it. They don't want to keep hearing it. They don't want to know what you think about the fact that the start has been slow. It is what it is. And they're not normally known for jumping out of the gates and rattling off, you know, 8 out of 10 and sending the message early. You know, they handle their business. But it does get to be a little bit taxing for them if over and over the media and then the fans, because of social media and how many players and coaches are checking social media, it's out there. And it's not fun, but it's not realistic to think that this is the beginning of the end and everybody should, you know, press the panic button.
Oh, Dusty's already annoyed, Blankers.
I know. Like, Dusty, I heard the quotes.
Dusty's already annoyed. Dusty gets so annoyed when anybody asks him about, like, lineup questions and like, strategy questions. Like, last night he didn't hit for Martin Maldonado in the ninth inning, where if Maldonado reaches, it brings the tying run to the plate. Chandler Rome, I believe, was the one that asked him about that in the post game, and he's like, look, can't pinch hit for him every single time. The lineup questions today, he gets so annoyed when he feels like other people are giving him suggestions and basically telling him how to do his job, which, I mean, I can understand that, but I also understand, well, why didn't you pinch hit for Martin Maldonado in that spot?
Well, it also goes with the job, right? It comes with the territory. Like, you take the good and the bad, and that means that as much as you get all the accolades when you win and you're winning the World Series and, you know, all the love for Pawpaw, you also have to understand that with that, there are going to be moments like this that are not going to go away just because you say you want them to stop. And people care, and it shows that they care a whole lot, but when they care, they're going to be passionate, and when they are passionate fans, you know, they get fanatical and they're going to come at you.
Alex says that Maldy was working with a new glove. I didn't catch that. I was watching the game on fast forward because I got home late. So I didn't see, like, every second of the broadcast. I was fast forwarding to, like, you know, key moments, things like that. Just the action plays, which is pretty easy to do nowadays because of the pitch clock. I didn't hear that, but if that is indeed true, why? Why are you working with a new glove in a real game with your ace on the staff? Maybe use that in the bullpen session. Mm-hmm. Maybe use that before the game starts. Like, that's kind of weird to me.
Yeah, I mean, you didn't catch that one, but you said I didn't catch that, and I said he didn't either because he had a new glove, and he's having problems with it. But
I baldied the joke.
Honestly, you're right. I mean, until you know, above all else, it's ready for game time.
That's weird.
Yeah, just use it in the pen and in batting practice and all the times when you're not going to need it to make big plays in the game. It's just simple baseball.
Yeah. 713-780-ESPN. What were your impressions of the Astros game yesterday? What's the, how do I want to phrase this? Is it more than nothing about a little bit of concern starting to creep in? I doubt it, but is there with the Astros losing four of their first six games? 713-780-ESPN, the HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. We're on Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN975. He's at Pac-Man Joel on Twitter. I'm at Jeremy Branham. I'm always very positive about Dusty Baker. I have some positivity to pull from how Dusty managed that game yesterday. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Talking sports with you, not at you. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Now from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Someone in the Twitch saying the Astros are on pace for over 100 losses.
Positivity at its finest.
He's right. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to on-pace guy you over the course of six games, but he's right. He's not wrong. 713-780-ESPN. Astros, by the way, today, it's getaway day. Final game of a homestand. Astros, Tigers, the fighting A.J. Hinches, Christian Javier on the mound before they travel to Minnesota. First pitch at Wink. 305, Wink. First one of the year, baby. All right, let's go out to the HRMP listener line. Chad, you're in the high with the Killer Bees. What's up, Chad?
Hey, guys. Overall, I think the Astros are going to be fine, but it is a little bit concerning. I don't think they need to be losing games that they should really be putting away early, especially to the Tigers. Now, you go in and play New York or somebody else or Seattle, you're going to get lit. They just need to take care of the business and get it done. I don't want to see any more of what I've been seeing. And I know we're a little wounded right now, but it is a little concerning. That's just my thought.
Yeah, I like it, Chad. I like it. Give them the business.
Look, appreciate it, Chad. I mean, here's the thing. It doesn't matter the opponent. It just matters that it matters. People care about it so much. But there's really nothing right now that you are going to do about it. Yeah, I mean, Dana Brown, we talked about, he could be looking more than internally. He could try and see if he could find some bridges for second base and or a corner outfielder in the meantime. But Brantley's supposed to be back in another 2 weeks or less. Altuve by June 1st, you're hoping. But, yeah, you could look to possibly do something to try and help out. But the opponent, I don't believe at this point matters, because everybody's going through all this and – you know, some teams just are traditionally slow starts. And Todd DeShow put it out there yesterday on Twitter. And he said, you know, in 2021, they were 7-10. They got swept by the Tigers. 2020, they started 7-10. 2019, 2-5. It's happened before. It's happening a little bit again. But the other thing, you don't want to crap on the Tigers, because they get paid too. They're professionals. And they're not going to come out and lay down. Or baseball's different. It's not like you're playing against a team that has two superstars in basketball and you know that there's a pretty good chance they're going to blow your doors off right away. Baseball's a game of chance, and the best, most successful hitters 3 out of 10 times, you know, this is the kind of thing that can happen early in the season or at any time. They've gotten swept by the Tigers in years past, so this is not something to be alarming because it was the Tigers either.
Yeah, I got swept by the A's last year, too.
Yeah.
Phillip 68, Astros are notorious for losing to bad teams. Absolutely right. Mr. Brochdash, remember last year when Oakland swept us? Degenerate gambler since the dynasty started. Vintage Astros lose to the scrub teams and beat the better teams. That's true.
That is pretty true.
For the most part. I love what you just said. Use that as a drop blinker. Blinkers and Joe. I think especially early in the season, it's not really about the opponent. And my comparison to that, and maybe because it's Masters weekend, and we'll be having the Killer Bee Masters draft a little bit later, which I always dominate and own that thing.
I believe I won it last year.
I believe that's true. I believe that Blankers has the green jacket.
Yes.
Anyways, I think that it's kind of like, especially early in the season, like first 81 games, like up until the All-Star break, before the stretch drive, whatever date you want to put on it, I think that a Major League Baseball schedule is almost like a golfer playing the course, more than it is anything to do with the opponent. Like, it's more about what that dude is doing on the course every single day. Same thing with the Astros. Same thing with any Major League Baseball team. Sure, there's competition that's a little bit better, a little bit worse, but it's a team that's trying to figure itself out. Because, look, I don't think the Astros are playing, like, awful baseball. Could they slug a little bit better? Yeah, certain dudes could be slugging a little bit better. Could the relievers be making a quality pitch here or there versus a bad pitch? Yeah. To me, it's more the timely hits, like not avoiding the timely hits. I don't think this team's necessarily playing awful. This isn't a 100-loss team. It's just those little timely hits or avoiding a timely hit just doesn't seem to be going the Astros' way right now. And because it's the first six games of the season, we're over rating the significance, and we're magnifying the significance of the first half a dozen games.
Yeah, no question about it. And you know, you're right. I think at this point, they're just trying to figure out what they have. Like, they brought some young kids up. They want to see, are they going to be contributors? Is it too big for them? Are they more apt to be sent back down and get more seasoning? And are we leaning more towards those guys being kind of, you know, 4A players than they are big leaguers that are going to be in our future, not only this season, but going forward? The analysis has started, and the moves they made were just to kind of see how some of these kids are going to react to being called up and if they could help right away. If they can't, you have other options. But I think that's why we said Dana Brown thought he might be able to just kind of casually come in, sit down in his office, and figure things out for a few months because he has such a good team. But now, because of the injuries, everybody is hyper-focused on everything with this team. And he doesn't have that kind of relaxed feel of, I can just kick back and evaluate. No, now every single day he's got to be looking at things between his minor league team and the way the young guys are performing at the major league level, seeing what other teams are doing with roster moves and available players, and trying to figure out, is there anything that I can or need to do between now and the time that I get some of these guys back?
713-780-ESPN, HRP listener line, 713-780-3776. Let's go back there for Chris. Chris, you're in the Hive with the Killer Bees. What's going on, Chris?
Yeah, what's going on, guys? Calling in to the Hive with a live update from Minute Maid Park.
Nice.
What's up, Joel?
What's up, man?
How you doing, sir?
All right, you?
What's going on, man? I was expecting a lot of, like, retirees here. You know, it's a day game, the first one of the year. But, man, there's a lot of kids here for Jordan Alvarez championship ring giveaway day. It's a good crowd here. Hey, I think the Astros are going to be fine. You know, they're a streaky team. We know that. You know, they'll go through this in the beginning of the season. But I think as fans, to give us some hope, you know, to make us feel a little better, let's get Alex Bregman going and Abreu going. You know, I think that makes us feel better. And Christian and Javier going at least six today. That would make me feel good, too. So jamming 97.5 in the stadium, guys. And you guys take care, all right?
Thanks, Chris. Appreciate being our roving reporter today. We always appreciate you checking in.
Killer Bee's got feet on the ground over at Minute Maid Park. Chris is there very early, though, for a 3:05 first pitch.
That's a good point.
Very early for a 3:05 first pitch. Look, no one thinks that the Astros are going to lose a lot. No one thinks that the Astros are going to miss the playoffs. At least I've not seen that from anybody with any sort of, like, sincerity. But we're going to react to the first six games. We're going to react to what we've seen so far. We're going to react to Jeremy Pena having a sub-300 on base percentage at the top of the order when that was a concern of mine, at least, hitting at the top of the order. We're going to react to Alex Bregman getting off to a slow start. We're going to react to the good. Framber Valdez, I thought, was a huge bright spot for the Houston Astros yesterday. Looks like that true ace at the top of the rotation where, look, he was great last year, but Justin Verlander was the ace. Justin Verlander was the alpha dog in the Astros rotation. So Framber's kind of taken that next step in his career, and through two starts, I think Framber's been great. And obviously, he was great last year. One of the positives that, because look, everybody loves to talk about Dusty and give Dusty suggestions. Like, we got tons of them rolling in on the text line, 713-780-3776. I thought one of the positives for Dusty yesterday, how about giving Kyle Tucker a green light on 3-0?
Yes, he did. Yeah, and I went back and rewound it going, wait a minute, did he just do that? And then to see where he hit the ball, I thought that was a great move and early on. And, you know, Chris was talking about getting Abreu going. I think Abreu's been just fine to start the season. But, you know, the one thing is
no power. No power.
No, but we expected that, right? Yeah. We expected that to some degree. We thought maybe the park would make a difference, but how big of a difference would it make? But you know that your home runs so far have only come from Jordan and from Tuck. But to get him going early with a blast like that, I thought was a great move.
Yeah, see, that's kind of the Dusty trying to instill confidence in his team. And he even talked about it yesterday because he was asked about, you know, why aren't you pinch hitting for this guy? Why aren't you pinch hitting for that guy? Which over a one-game period does make sense. And Dusty's like, look, I can't ruin the confidence of these players. Dusty thinks big picture. Like, the sooner that everybody realizes that, the more you'll kind of understand certain moves when it comes to Dusty Baker. Like, 7-8-6-9, why does he never pinch hit for Dubon late in games? Probably because he knows that he's going to need Dubon to start about 40% of the games at second base until Jose Altuve comes back. And if you're pinch hitting for Mauricio Dubon every single game late in games, you're probably going to get lesser production from Mauricio Dubon in those 40 games. He's thinking 40 games, not one game. 0029, I like Abreu in the two hole, leave Bregman in the four spot. Like, this is the stuff that drives Dusty Baker crazy, is everybody giving him suggestions, and Dusty sitting there going, man, we won a World Series last year, won 2,000 games in my career. I'm probably going to be a Hall of Fame manager, and people aren't letting me manage the way that I want to manage, with 162 games in mind, with big picture in mind, trying to instill confidence in my players. And I thought a great example of trying to instill confidence in his players yesterday was giving Kyle Tucker the green light on 3-0, and it went 485 feet away, exaggerating just a bit. But that's the kind of stuff that can get guys rolling. Like, maybe Mauricio Dubon picks up a big hit in the eighth inning. In fact, he did. Didn't he double down the right field line?
So maybe that can get Mauricio Dubon. They held him to a single, I believe, but yeah, he got a hit.
That's right. That's right. He did get held to a single. That dude played it pretty good off the wall.
Yep.
And it took a funny – I'm pretty sure that hit the security guard, too.
I thought it did, too. Even on the replay, you couldn't get a clear shot, but it looked like he couldn't get his butt out of the way.
Yeah, I thought he got him right on the rear. 713-780-ESPN, the HRP listener line, 713-780-3776. I do have a question, though, about this whole third catcher thing. Curious case of the third catcher for the Houston Astros. And look, I'm not going to criticize Dusty Baker, but I do have a question about why the Astros are keeping three catchers on this team. 713-780-ESPN, the HRP listener line, 713-780-3776. Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, guys, before we go to the break, tell you a little bit about Doc Linville again. I love Doc Linville because he's a game changer. He's a difference maker, and he makes a difference in your hairline. He does a lot of different things, but the thing that I think he's the absolute best in the country in is the NeoGraft procedure. The NeoGraft procedure, if you're not familiar, it's taking your own hair where genetically you're never going to lose it, the sides and the back, and moving some of it to where you need it most. Sometimes it's up on top on the back, or maybe it's your hairline in front. But either way, he can make a difference. He can be a game changer, and he can give you your hair back. It's absolutely fantastic. And for you as listeners of ESPN 97.5, a consultation normally costs $150, but because you listen to us, you get that consultation for free. All you got to do is go to 975hair.com, make an appointment, go in there, ask questions, get answers, and find out if the procedure is right for you too. He's done it for me and Johnny Granato, Fred Fowler, and a whole lot of others, and I'm telling you, he gets results. You can be the next in line to make sure that you get your hair back and get your confidence back with it. Check him out today and tell him I sent you by. Go to 975hair.com and go see my friend Doc Linville.
Independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
OG says, y'all giving Dusty way too much credit. My grandma could have won a World Series with last year's Astros team. That's interesting.
That's really why I said you should probably avoid quoting certain people on the show. But
okay. It was good radio. Degenerate says, might need an extra arm in the pen, don't need a third catcher. You can't have more than 13 arms. The Astros have 13 arms. So it's not a matter of having two catchers, a 14th pitcher. You can't do it. By Major League Baseball right. rule. Now, I am curious about the third catcher because I was caught off guard. I thought that the Astros had a pretty decent chance of keeping three catchers. I was very caught off guard that it was Salazar.
Me too.
Cesar Salazar. They haven't used him much. They brought him in mop-up duty in one game, and he's actually starting today behind the dish. First pitch at, wink, wink, 3:05 as he gets the start for Christian Javier. We'll catch him. I'm curious because, look, Dusty Baker, he was asked yesterday why they didn't pinch hit for Martin Maldonado in the ninth inning. If Maldonado would have reached there, would have brought the tying run to the plate, he grounds out. This isn't a knock on Dusty Baker managing there because, look, for one game, I think Dusty pinch hits for Martin Maldonado. If yesterday was a playoff game, he would have pinch hit for Martin Maldonado. There's no doubt about that. This isn't a knock on Salazar. Like, I have nothing negative to say about Salazar. I haven't seen him play a whole lot. We'll see him this afternoon, 3:05. you know, but I don't think many people think he is an everyday starter in the big leagues either at the catcher spot. I think that his ceiling's kind of a backup catcher spot. This isn't even a knock on Martin Maldonado's inability to hit the baseball. Sub-200 guy last year under the Mendoza line. I'm curious, though, why the Astros are keeping a third catcher if you're not going to pinch it for Martin Maldonado. Which is like, okay, yeah. Fine, Dusty. You're big picture Dusty. You're not going to pinch it for Maldi. I understand that. You're looking for big picture. You want to keep the confidence in Martin Maldonado high. But why are you keeping a third catcher if you're not going to be pinch hitting in those spots? That's why you have a third catcher.
Well, I would guess that his answer would be versatility because he doesn't play just catcher and you can move. You know, you have options, but you're supposed to use your options, right, at all times. This is like, from a Maldi perspective, it doesn't matter what game it is, number six or number 162 or in the playoffs, do your job. And if you keep these guys on the roster, then put them in the game and manage each game unless there's, you know, other factors we're not clearly aware of in terms of guys with a lot of wear and tear or nagging injuries or things like that. But I mean, Corey Lee was a shock to me that he wasn't on the roster. Corey Lee's already been up. Corey Lee's a guy that is your catcher of the future, according to a lot of people that speak on Corey Lee. And you would think that Corey Lee is a guy that, especially early on, you can have there and work with the pitchers that he's worked with previously. And he can spell Maldonado. He can pinch hit for Maldonado. He's a better hitter than Maldonado. You would think if you were going to keep three, it would be Diaz, Corey Lee, and Maldi. But, you know, their answer to that was, well, he's got to get at bats every day, and he needs to get those in Sugarland.
Yeah, and that's not what I agree with that. I do. Like, that. This isn't a take that opposite approach. Like, Todd, the show, they explained they need Lee to be a regular starting catcher and to be sitting around too much on the MLB squad. I'm good with that. I'm good with Corey Lee getting every day at bat. So this isn't a, why are they keeping a third catcher? It should be Corey Lee. This is, you're not utilizing your third catcher because you're not pinch hitting for Martin Maldonado. Why not have another position player that can help you out a little bit? Like, right now, the Astros slugging is poor, right? J.J. Mattejevic, like, I don't think he's a future everyday first baseman in the bigs, but I think he's more of a bat than Salazar. Did he homer today for the Space Cowboys?
He sure did.
Like, you're DHing right now a lot of times, Corey Jolks, or when Yordan's DHing, Jolks is in left field. David Hensley's gotten a start at the DH spot. Michael Brantley's away, so you could kind of use a lefty there. Like, I don't understand why there's the third catcher and not a Mattejevic or a dude that has position flexibility. Because I think J.J. Mattejevic, if you're not getting any production from the DH spot, give him a spot start against a righty.
Sure.
Because at least you have a better chance of, like, using his bat than how you're currently, you know, using a third catcher.
Here was my point, too, Jeremy. It wasn't the fact that, you know, I was shocked that Salazar was on the roster. But Diaz is a guy that you can use in multiple different places that everybody knows is a bat first. And if he's a bat first and you could possibly use him in the outfield, you can use him at DH, you can play maybe some first base as well. He doesn't have to be the backup catcher, but he's a guy that comes into those spots when you have a backup catcher ready to go back and play defense that can come in and be a better bat than what you're putting out there in those situations. And it doesn't matter when those situations arise and what part of the season you're in. I think it's great for them to get the experience. I think it's great for Dusty to know who he can count on and, you know, and see the different options he has and what they can do. But, I didn't understand when Salazar was called up. I do understand that Corey Lee is supposed to get, you know, the majority of the starts down in Sugarland. But I don't think they have a, you know, we talked about this a few weeks ago. I don't think they have a, if that's the case, I don't think the other two catchers are really good options to be the backup catcher right now.
I guess part of it depends on how long Brantley's going to be hurt. Because if Dana Brown's, like, truthful and he misses 3 weeks, it's like, okay. Like, you can live 3 weeks with a rotation of DH, of, you know, Diaz, Jolks, Hensley, keep the third catcher, whatever. But if it's longer than that and none of these rotating options at the DH spot are giving you anything, because, look, the DH spot in baseball is supposed to be one of your best offensive players. Mm-hmm. Like, that is a spot where you can count for some above-average offensive production. And the Astros aren't getting that right now because, quite frankly, they're using a bunch of 4A players in that role. I hate to be brutally honest about it, but I'm being brutally honest about it. So if you're getting nothing in that spot and Brantley all of a sudden his injury turns into a 3-week injury to a 6-week injury, you got to look at some different options. And it's not necessarily Corey Lee, unless Corey Lee's knocking the cover off the baseball. It might bring you back to a Justin Dearden conversation, because you don't need to keep three catchers. I would like a bat that I can trust somewhat, and especially to start at the DH spot, because right now you're getting nothing offensively from the DH spot or left field, whatever position Yordan Alvarez isn't in during, you know, that specific game. So I'd be keeping an eye to see who's really hitting it well in Sugarland, keeping an eye on how long this Michael Brantley injury might be. Because, look, if Brantley comes back in 3 weeks, this is all a moot point. Mm-hmm. Like, he comes back, he's your DH left fielder, no problem. You don't need Justin Dearden. But if all of a sudden he has some sort of, you know, he has a setback with that shoulder, I don't think you can continue with this rotating DH thing that you have going on right now, because you're not getting enough production.
No, but like I said, I think Dana Brown's just trying to see some guys right now and see how they react to the opportunity. And you know, and sometimes you get guys that just, you know, capitalize on the door being open just a little bit and show that they belong, and they do some things. But they also, you know, were probably watching what they were going to do with Dearden. They didn't want to start the clock yet. And like you said, if Brantley's out a longer period of time, I believe that he will be called up. I believe he'll be a guy that they're probably going to have to call on if Dana Brown doesn't look outside the organization. They have options. But I also think that even when you say that, if Brantley comes back, you know, if Brantley comes back at the right time by the end of the month and he's ready to go, and you have Altuve on the mend and you know they're going to get better, I still don't know if Dusty likes his options going for a pinch hitter and going to the bench with what he's seen so far of the guys that have been up.
Are you saying if they're healthy?
Yeah.
Like fully healthy?
Yeah. I guess Jolks is a guy that... You know, he's had a couple of hits, but is that a guy that you're going to say, hey, I can pinch hit for Maldi here with a pinch hitter and then put my backup catcher in?
Yeah.
But do you believe in it?
I think if you're fully healthy, that guy's David Hensley.
Okay.
Yeah, I think if you're fully healthy, that guy's David Hensley. Hensley would be your best offensive player off the bench when you're fully healthy. I really don't think that that's really up for debate currently. Like, I think people thought that Yiner Diaz might be able to surpass him from an offensive point of view. It's not there right now for this team. Now, look, I mean, you can even be critical and say that if David Hensley's your top bench option, your top bench option from an offensive point of view, that roster construction heading into the season wasn't ideally, you know, great. Because, look, I think David Hensley's going to have a chance to be a good utility player in the big leagues. But he's green. He doesn't have a whole lot of experience. There's no guarantee that he's going to be. Whenever you're a World Series champion and you're trying to defend and you're hashtag ready to reign, you would think you would have a better option as like a super utility guy, a guy that you can trust off the bench to give you professional at-bats. The Astros have been spoiled with that since this golden era, whether it was Aledmys Diaz these last few years or whether it was Marwin Gonzalez. I mean, that's a critical role. Like, that's a big role.
Sure it is.
I like David Hensley, but that's a lot to put on a rookie whenever we don't know if he's ready or not.
No, I mean, I think you're right. I think that's a critical role for really good teams, too. I mean, it's essential. I think that you can upgrade everything that you do if you know that you've got guys waiting on the bench that are reliable guys that make contact and get knocks and can really be big in big situations and have experience doing it. And I think that we talked about this from the depth perspective before the season even started, as the injuries started popping up, we talked about it more. I know that the general manager position was in flux for a lot of the offseason, but I believe that once Dana Brown got, you know, into the chair, the first thing that he had to look at was, ooh, we're pretty thin when it comes to, you know, other than our starters, what we have to work with, not knowing all of our farm system. But maybe that's part of the reason why he's kind of taking a little time to see who these guys are.
Yeah. Like, do you have to do that in the bigs, though?
Do what?
Like, do you have to get your eyes on them to see what they're like as big leaguers, to give you, like, an assessment of who they are as a player? Is it necessary to see them on the big league team? Because, look, I love Corey Jolks. Go Cougs. Mm-hmm. Let's have an honest conversation of Corey Jolks' winner. The Astros didn't protect him on the 40-man roster. They made him available in the Rule 5 draft. Any team in Major League Baseball could have selected Corey Jolks and put him on their big league roster. No one in baseball did that. 30 teams in baseball told you that Corey Jolks was not a big leaguer yet, including the Astros. And now he's getting semi-regular at-bats for a team that's supposed to be defending a world championship.
And I get that, but I also think that at the time that they were doing what they did, they didn't know who was pulling the strings and making those decisions or who was going to do it long-term. And even though Dana Brown probably has an idea, he's getting to know his, he's putting his staff in place. He's getting to know his staff, his personnel, and he's transitioning from the Braves and all the talent that he really knows to a team that he had to pick up on the fly and start learning a lot about.
Yeah.
So I don't know how much he knew, and so that's why I think he wants to see some of these guys that he's maybe heard about, but he hasn't really seen with his own eyes to be able to analyze them.
I think you have to do that for the long term, too. I mean, when you talk about not knowing guys, it's not just about this season. We all are on the assumption, I would have guessed, that this is Michael Brantley's last year with the Astros. So sure. Dana Brown has to not just evaluate the now, but the immediate future. And the way, like, I don't blame the Astros for moving on from James Click, but the way they did it and the time they took, it just extended the process. And Dana Brown has to learn a whole new organization. So while there's struggles now, I think the struggles are for the better, because Dana Brown's going to get a better picture of what this team is in the future without Michael Brantley starting next season, where the flaws are, who these prospects are. And, you know, maybe he didn't feel that way about Corey Jolks. He wasn't part of that decision, I would assume, to put him up for the Rule 5 draft. So you got to evaluate everything for Dana Brown. He's in a tough spot, to be honest.
Y'all are right in the fact that Dana Brown was not the Astros general manager that left him unprotected. And y'all are right that Dana Brown was not one of the other 29 general managers who did not draft Corey Jolks in the Rule 5 draft. So this is more about how other general managers view Corey Jolks versus how Dana Brown views Corey Jolks. You're all right on that front, but there's not really anybody in baseball that thinks he's a big-time prospect. Maybe he can turn into being like a really good, you know, fourth outfielder. Maybe he can be a platoon left fielder next year for, you know, he's your left-handed, he's your starter against left-handed pitching in left field, and Justin Dearden's your starter in left field against right-handed pitching. I think the Jolks can turn into that type of player. So this is not a knock at all on Jolks. This is more of a knock on, this isn't a very deep roster. And because you're missing two starters right now, which, by the way, teams miss two starters in baseball all the time. The Astros were down two starters last year in the playoffs, but because they had options, because they were deep, they were able to sustain those injuries. We're seeing right now that there's concerns about this team being able to sustain injury. And look, Dana Brown could do something about that in the deadline, but that means you're trading assets as opposed to, like, he was put on the job late January. There were still dudes out there that could be contributors on this big league team. Depth was a huge concern of mine coming into the year. Look, I'm not going to panic after six games. They can still fix that in a lot of ways. But right now, it is showing how that is a negative for the Houston Astros.
And I think he knew that going in. He just has to explore, you know, one, he's got to get to know his new system and all the players in it. And two, he has to know, hey, for next year, to Joe's point, there's free agency too.
Why couldn't he sign Jurickson Profar, though?
Yeah,
like,
I don't.
Everybody's saying that he was late on the job, but he could have signed Jurickson Profar. He had 2 months to do it.
Yeah, but if everyone in the organization is telling you that you don't need Jurickson Profar, you just got here, what are you supposed to do?
Yeah, I
it depends
point,
on who tells you that. If that's the owner with the checkbook, it's one thing.
But that's also a mistake, and that's what I'm trying to say. Like, if that was told to him, that was a mistake. Whoever's blame that falls on, that is a mistake. 713-780-ESPN, the HRP listener line, 713-780-3776. Yiner Diaz not in the lineup today. Salazar starting at the catcher spot. He's not DHing, anything like that. What's going on with the Yiner Diaz conundrum for Dusty Baker and the Houston Astros? 713-780-3776. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Your team's our priority. Join the conversation with the Killer Bees. Now coming to you live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Astros lineup is out for today's game. 6389, y'all keep saying 305, but the joke will be when the game really is over by 305. Ha ha. 8074, Astros game is at 110. Don't believe what you see on the internet. The internet's not always true. The game begins at, wink, wink, 305. 713-780-ESPN, the HRP listener line, 713-780-3776. Todd says, I think Dusty keeps playing Myers to force Brown's hand and bring Dearden up. I don't know if I would go that far. Dusty can do some quirky things when he's not necessarily
when he's
in agreement
perturbed
with his general manager. So I wouldn't put it past Dusty. I just don't think he loves his center field options. I don't think Dearden really is the long-term answer at center field either. I don't think that Dearden can, like, withstand playing center field at a high defensive level. I think he's more of a corner outfielder that can play center field.
But I also think that this might also be a clear-cut thing that James Click's no longer here, and you may need a center fielder of the future because it ain't Jake. And we know that James Click thought that Jake Meyers was the center fielder of the future. And what you're seeing out of Jake, I know he had two knocks last night, but he didn't exactly rip the cover off of it.
Yeah, but if we're gonna bash Jake for hitting the ball 400 feet, not getting a hit, we have to give him credit for the hits that weren't hit hard.
I know, but I still look at him, and I just, even in the outfield, I think he throws things flat-footed. I don't think that...
He's got a noodle. There's no doubt about that.
And I just, I think that the line he takes to get to balls and some of the things that he's doing, there's a lot of work still to be done there. And maybe that work is better suited in Sugar Land, where he also builds up some confidence because he knows he can hit the pitching down there. But right now, especially with the predicament you're in with the injuries, at a certain point, I think you have to look at this roster and say... Yeah, for the long haul and maybe for the short term and maybe for the long haul too, you got to figure some things out in the outfield because Brantley probably, to Joe's point, is only going to play one more year here. And you need to start figuring out what your options are both internally and externally. And if you can catch a guy right now or get in on a deal, you need to start looking at that too.
I think internally the plan would be that Dearden's your future left fielder and Drew Gilbert's your future center fielder. Mm-hmm. I think that would be the leader in the clubhouse. Someone was tweeting us about Pedro Leon.
Yeah, where do you see Leon playing? I was going to ask you that.
See, he's kind of, I mean, the beauty of Pedro Leon's, he can kind of play anywhere. The downside of Pedro Leon is, does he have one position? I think he's athletic enough to be a really good center fielder. I think he's athletic enough to probably be a pretty good middle infielder, probably more second than short. Like, I think shortstop, you need a level of, like, natural ability, like a little bit of know-how to play the position. He's probably – his best defensive position, I would say, is probably center field. He's boom or bust with the bat. Like, he can be electric at times. He draws a fair amount of walks, but he also strikes out a ton. Like, he's probably a slightly better version than Jose Siri. Like, a little bit more highly touted prospect than a Jose Siri type. That's kind of how I view Pedro Leon. But with position flexibility. Like, he's capable of playing multiple positions and the infield.
He's playing right field, it seems like, for the most part right now, and Dearden in center. He's hitting.
So that's good. That's a sign to me that they want Dearden to play center field this year for the Astros.
Yeah, that's probably true.
He's hitting .438. I mean, look, it's four games, but like
Dearden is?
No, Pedro Leon.
Ah.
And I think, I mean, you go back to last spring training when Dusty was just outward about his, I would call it, disdain or unhappiness with Meyers and McCormick. You know, he was the one pumping up.
He was.
You know, Pedro Leon before Leon got hurt again. So, like, I think that's a guy that, you know, is in the favor of at least Dusty Baker, at least he was at one time. So, that to me would be, he's still a name to look out for.
Like, I think
between
so.
Him and Dearden.
When does Dusty, though, decide to have that conversation with Dana Brown? Say, look, I'm giving these guys an opportunity. I know that a lot of people have thought highly about him in the past, especially Jake Meyers. But at a certain point, I need someone that can help me more, and I want to see this kid Leon.
I think it could happen as soon as this year. The dominoes need to fall in place, but I think that Pedro Leon possibility has an ETA of 2023.
I'm thinking about
an ETA of 2023.
I'm thinking about depending on what happens with Brantley. I mean, and what you're seeing in the meantime with this team somewhat scuffling. I know it's just getting off to a slow start, but I'm thinking about the fact that at a certain point, Dusty says, "Hey, bring me that kid because I can't keep doing this." And I need some kind of production, and I need a guy that I feel like, you know, is going to give me good effort at the plate with a good discipline, and I want to see Leon up here.
Yeah, see, look, I think Leon has a chance to be a pretty good big leaguer. I think Dearden has a chance to hit pretty good in the big leagues, but it's kind of the same issue. Like, it's Yiner Diaz, we thought that he was going to be able to hit good, and it's far too early to close the book on Yiner Diaz. But you're all of a sudden counting on huge roles and huge responsibility for rookies, and players mm-hmm. are never at their best whenever they're rookies. So it's kind of the same thing. Like, are they a little bit more talented? Are they more thought of, like, as prospects? Yeah, probably. But it's still, you're running into the same thing. You're still running out rookies in really critical roles for a team that's supposed to be a big league team. Like, this isn't supposed to be the Tigers. It's supposed to be a team that's defending the championship, and you have key roles for some young players. Now, large part of that is because of injury, and you hope that one of these guys can have a really strong rookie year, and not that they're going to beat Jeremy Pena, like that level of rookie, but that you can count on them, you know, in their rookie season. 713-780-ESPN, the HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. Dre asked, because Yiner Diaz is not in the lineup today, is Dusty punting on Diaz already? Salazar makes his first start at catcher today. Yiner Diaz is getting less and less DH opportunities. I wouldn't say that he's punting on Yiner Diaz yet, but it does seem like there is some early indication that he might be losing a little bit of confidence in his rookie Yiner Diaz.
Yeah, I honestly believe that it's still not off the table that they might be looking and still at some point they would consider bringing in a veteran backup catcher and just letting those guys keep their getting their seasoning and at bats and working in Sugarland and you know, and see you next year. I think that Dusty's looking for a spark right now, and he knows he's looking anywhere he can get it because, you know, as much as he says he's not listening and everybody needs to just relax, the fact is that, you know, he knows this team's too good to be playing the way they're playing. And yeah, the injuries, no one's going to give you the box of tissues and care a whole lot other than your fan base and your organization. And he's trying to find a spark that maybe gets things going in the right direction. Give the kid a shot.
Yeah, I think that Dusty doesn't really love his center field options at all.
True.
I don't think he loves playing Jake every day. He clearly doesn't like to use Chaz McCormick every day. Dusty and Chaz both admitted that the mistake that he made on the bases the other day was something that can't happen and that they should have been on third base 2 days ago, which game would have been a different way if he's on third base, I think. But Dusty doesn't like what he has in center field currently. Could Dearden change that potentially? Is Leone a possibility? Potentially. But this team right now is kind of in an interesting spot because you're waiting for two key players to come back. And because you don't have Altuve, because you don't have Brantley, you're talking about pretty significant roles for a Corey Jolks, who 30 teams at the time did not want him on their big league team. You're counting on David Hensley, who is an older rookie in Major League Baseball. And you have Yiner Diaz that you're using for a pretty considerable, substantial amount of at-bats. It's a weird spot for a defending champion. 3780 says, who do you think won the Miles Straw trade? Or maybe a better question is, who would you rather have right now? Miles Straw, Maton, and, well, okay, he just spelled out the trade. Who do you think had the best side of the Miles Straw trade?
Look, for what they needed him for the year that they needed him to do it, I think Maton was a really good add for that team. You know, Miles Straw is who he is. They've done just fine with whoever they put in center field. I don't think that Miles Straw was your definitive center fielder of the future. I think they feel like that's a position that they can go out and find and get and develop, and they actually drafted to do so with Gilbert. So I would still say that maybe it was a win-win. I could call it a push.
It depends on which Miles Straw you're getting. Like, Miles Straw last year as an offensive player was dreadful. He had .221 with a .564 OPS. Like, he was awful offensively. Maton's a pretty solid big league reliever. I think sometimes we underrate who Phil Maton is because he's, like, one of the lowest pitchers on this pecking order in a very dominant bullpen, at least last year it was. Maton's a solid big league reliever. And the jury's still out on Yiner Diaz, but like, I don't think that Miles Straw would be the answer to the Astros center field position. I think he would just be another name in what has been a questionable position. Because, mm-hmm. like, Straw, Myers, Chaz, they're all kind of somewhat on that same tier. So, I don't – yeah, you might be right. It might be a win-win. The Guardians got what they needed.
Yeah, Astros call it a get push. What they need.
Yeah, we can call it a push as of now. Diaz can be the swing in that, though.
He could.
713-780-ESPN, the HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. So, Bill Belichick has shopped Mac Jones this offseason. The Texans reportedly have been one of the teams that have been talked to about Mac Jones. Make of that what you will. Would you be interested – in that type of trade? Would you be interested in Mac Jones as a Houston Texan? I think I know the answer. 713-780-3776. Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, guys, before we go to break, I want to tell you about the fact that, you know, my bookie is there for you all the time whenever you want to make a game more interesting. But right now it's Masters Week. It is the gift that keeps on giving. It's the beauty of Augusta National and all of the interest that goes with it. Make it a little bit more interesting. You can put a wager down on some of your favorite golfers at mybookie.ag. There's nothing like cheering on your favorite golfers during a major tournament with a wager in at mybookie.ag. And if you're not a big fan of golf, but you really like to wager, you can make some individual bets on a Scottie Scheffler or a Jordan Spieth or a Rory McIlroy. You name it, you can bet on them, and you can get more out of your golf watching experience than ever before. All you got to do is go to mybookie.ag, and as I always tell you, especially if you're making that first deposit, use our promo code BET975. You get an exclusive deposit bonus up to $1,000. It's basically 50% of what you put in. You put $500 in your account, you get an extra $250 added on, more money in your account, more games you can bet on, and of course, more chances to win. And at MyBookie, it's not just about golf and a major, but there's also Major League Baseball now on a daily basis, NBA, NHL, soccer, XFL, UFC, you name it, they've got it, and they even have live casino betting with real dealers going on whenever you get on the site. Blackjack for anybody? Go in and get in on it right now at mybookie.ag. You can be the master of your destiny this week, but you can enjoy gambling on sports at mybookie.ag every week and take it to a whole new level. Remember, get that welcome bonus with your initial deposit up to $1,000 by using the promo code BET975. As I always tell you, bet anything, anytime, anywhere, with the only place I tell you to do it. It's mybookie.ag, promo code BET975.
Stop the podcast.
Stop the podcast.
Hi, everybody. Just to let you know, this episode of Fish is sponsored by TV licensing.
Yes, TV licensing. What are you watching on TV, Andy?
I have been watching a show that's called 2 Weeks in August.
Okay.
Despite it being July at the time of recording.
Oh, you don't have to watch TV shows in the time that their name references.
No, absolutely. I watched The Darling Buds of May in winter. Anyway, 2 Weeks in August. It's a really good series. It's set on a lovely Mediterranean holiday.
Ooh.
And it's a group of old mates from uni who've gathered together. Some of them have got kids. Some of them haven't. Some of them have been going through big life events. And it's one of those amazing pressure cooker series where things just get more and more and more tense.
Oh, those stressful ones.
Yeah, I love it. I love it.
I love my comedy, I gotta say. So I've been watching Android, which is Diane Morgan's new thing, and I absolutely love it. But I just, for me, I always, on television, watch everything with someone from Bolton in it. That's basically all I watch.
And she's from Bolton?
She's from Bolton.
But in this show, I believe she's a robot.
She's a robot, and it is not certain where in the country she's from.
It depends where the facility is that makes her, I suppose.
I guess so. But what are we actually here to say?
Oh, we're here to say that if you want to watch any of these shows, your TV license covers you to watch over 400 TV channels and everything on BBC iPlayer.
That is incredible.
So 2 Weeks in August has finished going out now, but you can get hold of it on the iPlayer.
If you want to find out more about this, then go to tvl.co.uk/pod.
Now back to the tension and the stress and the misery of this episode of Fish.
Oh, I thought you were referencing Bolton. On with the podcast.